Welcome to Seeking Alpha's Wall Street Breakfast, your daily source of market news and analysis. Subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher.
Welcome to Seeking Alpha Editor's Roundtable, what moved markets this week for the week ending Friday, July 23rd, 2021, a week marked by a pretty dramatic sell-off on Monday, but now the last 4 days have been green across the board, a return to risk-taking by investors. We've recovered all of our losses from Monday, and stocks are now heading higher once again. So we're up for the week, and that would make this the fourth out of 5 weeks that stocks are positive. I'm curious what my colleagues have to say for themselves and what they have to say about this week's market activity and other things. And I will introduce them now, joined here by, in no particular order, Brad Olison, VP of News, Kim Kahn, Senior News Editor, Stephen Alfer, Managing Editor of Breaking News, and I am your host and moderator, Nathaniel E. Baker, Senior Editor of Strategic Contributors here at Seeking Alpha. All right, let me kick it over to Kim without further delay to give us the big picture, lay of the land of what moved markets this week.
We certainly had a lot of doom to start the week. There's a lot of peak growth talk, and they had yields falling and stocks really tumbling, and then the dip buyers just came in, you know, with rally on, kind of turned it around Tuesday, another rally Wednesday, Thursday, we're going into Friday with, you know, looks like we're going to have another batch of strong gains and a very strong week. Not a lot on the economic calendar to kind of move things. So, I mean, we had the bouncing action in yields, which basically did a complete round trip, went all the way down to 1.12% on the 10-year, back up around 1.3% now. So little change from the week before. And there's a lot of theories on you know, who keeps pushing the market higher. The latest one is now it is the retail investors. Steve Stovall was saying that it seems like the retail investors were coming in because he sure wasn't a dip buyer on Monday. He's still waiting for a 5% correction on the S&P, which it hasn't had for more than 300 days. And so now there's a lot of eyeballs on just like, you know, if there's a savings glut and if that money is actually going into the market, and if so, is it going into the kind of, you know, retail names that are going to prop up this market? I guess we'll see a little more of that when the mega caps have their earnings next week.
Yeah, you mentioned earnings, which certainly helped the narrative here. A lot of companies coming out and beating estimates. And I suspect that's where many of the winners and losers for the week kind of divided themselves. Brad, tell us about that.
Yeah, that's definitely true. It was definitely an earnings-driven week. And with regard to the retail investors comment that Kim just alluded to, I will note that the American Association of Individual Investors bullish sentiment rating actually plunged and within the last 7 days to levels we haven't seen since October of last year, when the S&P was trading in the 3,500 range. That's, hard to believe we were even back there, considering how high we are now. Back then, just from recall that we plunged to 3,200 at the end of October before rebounding extremely strongly in November. So I think we're seeing some of that rebound now. As we saw, just all it takes is a couple down days and all of a sudden everyone's throwing the baby out with the bathwater. But back to earnings, back to the winners, the losers. As you intimated, it was an earnings-driven week. Chipotle among the biggest winners, demonstrating that you can pass on some of the increased labor costs onto consumers and still outperform. You have to kind of throw out their same-store sales numbers because that is a comparison to the COVID era. But that being said, their sales were extremely strong. Their profitability rose despite those higher labor costs. Etsy was a big winner, partially because of the COVID trade resurfaced earlier on in the week. A staffing firm, RHI, Robert Half, record levels of demand for the company's services. I think we've seen that in the JOLTS data from the Department of Labor. Job openings are strong, companies are hiring, so there's a lot of demand there, and they're poised to benefit. And record earnings, I think in their earnings conference call, they demonstrated that this is the highest level of demand they've ever recorded. And on non earnings-related news for winners. We had Moderna. They were added to the S&P. And there were also a few research reports over the course of this week demonstrating the power of some of these vaccines from Pfizer and Moderna that showed strong benefit against the Delta variant, which is part of the reason why we sold off earlier this week, if we recall, though it has been a long week with all sorts of different narratives strung between it. On the loser's side, before we get to the S&P 500 names, we can't let the week go without discussing what's happened with these Chinese ADRs. Absolutely bludgeoned. You saw education names, tutoring names, like Tal Education drop 50%. You've seen some of this other intervention in Didi, which is a recent IPO. They've just been hit on reports that they're going to be fined by the Chinese government. And that's kind of flowed through to some of the larger, more traditional ADRs that we've come to know, like Alibaba, JD.com, and Baidu. All three of those are down three of the last 4 weeks by close to 5%. But now moving on to the S&P 500, which most of our listeners probably care about a little bit more, you saw some mean reversion there. So energy and real estate are the top two best sectors this year, but they rounded out the bottom three this week. Interestingly, because of earnings, no single stocks, however, were in the bottom 10 worst performers of those groups. So instead, you had OMC, that's Omnicom. They're an advertiser with earnings. They struggled. Kimberly-Clark, you may know them from paper products like toilet paper and other water. They benefited during the fear buying, I guess, during COVID, but they also pointed to inflation concerns among their reasons for their profit might potentially getting squeezed. Netflix also got hit. They were a big winner over the course of this pandemic. And so they had some pretty poor results overall. And that kind of rounds it out. Those are some of the bigger news pieces this week and some of the biggest losers, at least as far as earnings were concerned.
Sounds like a busy week. Stephen, what were you watching?
As Kim talked about, we should be accustomed to this by now, is how quick these sell-offs are, how quickly they're kind of shrugged off when we move back to buying. The action Monday was panicking, right? Interest rates were plunging near 1.1% for the 10-year. Markets were plunging. Kim and I talked Tuesday morning. There was a bounce in futures, and we both decided, this looks ugly. This looks like one of those days where we're going to get the bounce in futures early in the morning, and then the sell-off's going to continue. You know, as we know, that didn't happen. Markets have just gone straight north since then. So are we out of the woods as far as some coming slowdown with the Delta variant? I don't know. I recall the action in January, February of 2020, when markets kept going up in the face of some pretty scary COVID headlines. And the reaction was, well, the markets are telling you COVID's really not going to be that big of a deal. Listen to the market action. Well, that didn't work out so well. You know, by late February, you know, markets started going down 3% per day, every day for a period of like 2 weeks. So who knows? As far as like inflation goes, I had a really interesting podcast chat with CME Group Chief Economist Blue Putnam this week. Nothing revolutionary, but it was really good to chat with him to kind of get back to the basics. And he said, hey, we're in the early stage of an economic expansion, and what we're seeing is not unusual, right? What do suppliers do? What do businesses do in recessions? They cut back capacity, they cut back labor, and then all of a sudden you get a bottom, you get this big boom in economic growth. Everybody's caught short. They're caught short workers, they're caught short supply, you get a spike in inflation. It's his estimation that this is, you know, maybe a little bit unusual, but basically a typical early stage economic expansion. He expects we're already past the fastest growth phase of this economic expansion, which tends to come right after the bottom of the recession. So, it was a really interesting chat. And he says that, the bond market isn't telling you a whole lot other than, you know, we're probably past the fastest pace of this expansion phase.
I think that's interesting. There were two research reports actually from some of the strategists on the street that actually indicated much of the same, mostly that we are in the early stages. JP Morgan said that we're still early in the cycle despite this move in bonds and stocks, which people seem to be indicating is a late cycle, but they still saw, JP Morgan at least sees a lot of compelling risk reward in some of these reopening stocks, and they're kind of dismissing the Delta risk. I think we talked about that in the last couple of weeks. They see some big opportunity in travel and cruise lines now that they're 30% off their highs. So a little bit of a knee-jerk reaction, it seems like, in the market. And I think BTIG was also kind of dismissing a lot of the moves in the bond market this week, saying that it's just a matter of supply and demand. There's a ton of money chasing a lot of assets. Bonds happen to be a place where people are putting their money with equities at highs. And they also talked about that cycle that Steve was just mentioning, where once the ISM manufacturing PMI reaches above 60, they called it rarefied air, then the market peaks about 30 months after that. Wow. So still a ways to go, at least among some of the strategists, despite some of the low-hanging punditry fruit that is just talking about whether yields are up or yields are down.
Well, on the bearish front from the strategist, I saw there's a question of, is this actually a new economic cycle, though? Or is it just a continuation of one with an interruption, which means another recession could be around the corner?
One would think that this is a new cycle. I mean, everything was forcefully, it wasn't a natural thing, but it was, things were stopped dead last March and the economy shut down across the board and then reopened. But who knows? It's interesting. But Stephen, to your point about the Tuesday morning futures numbers, the important difference between bear markets and bull markets is that oftentimes in bear markets, you get a little bit of that dead cat bounce in the futures, which then sell off, you know, once the real trading starts. And then in bull markets, usually you have the opposite. You have some futures that are negative and then they go higher. But so, yeah, I too was kind of prepared for Tuesday to be a not a very good day, but it all turned out very, very differently. Where the COVID concerns are, the Delta variant is concerned, you know, Scott Gottlieb said that we're basically closer to the end of this. That is the guy's name, right? Scott Gottlieb?
That's correct.
The doctor guy. Yeah, he said we're closer to the end of this than the beginning. So I'll take his word for that. It appears that it was mostly due to that, but we'll have to wait and see. All right, let's move on now to the next segment of the show where we discuss our favorite stories, Seeking Alpha articles, tweets, or other items of interest that caught our notice this week. Let's start with Kim.
I want to look at Netflix, and they reported earnings this week, and they had cut what's becoming a typical quarter for them, maybe, of where the street's upset with one metric and it sells off, but analysts jump in and say, hey, everything's just fine with the company. But I think more interesting is their announcement of the decision that they're going to go into the video game space and have it on their platform for free. They're going to have games. And, you know, what that means for, you know, the video game sector as a whole, and also noted that Reed Hastings back in 2019 called Fortnite one of Netflix's biggest competitors. So obviously that was just a throwaway line. He was serious about getting into this space. They're saying that, you know, if Netflix decides to do their own proprietary kind of gaming system, that could be fraught with problems. But if they go to a third party, that could work much better. That brings a big, you know, takeover speculation into play. Citi called the Netflix decision an existential threat to the, you know, current publishers out there right now. So if, you know, if Netflix is, you know, as we all know, has the cash, could, you know, have its eye on Take-Two or Activision or something like that, and just bring it in to just really jumpstart its game system.
Hmm. Brad, what about you?
So I guess kind of building on the video game theory, theme, just talk about NVIDIA, right? A lot of their processors are a big part of the video game sphere, but we had a lot of news on them this week. We had a big stock split and, you know, shares were slightly impacted there. There was the antitrust regulator for NVIDIA's ARM acquisition in the UK chimed in, and there was some decent news there. And additionally, we had a variety of analysts that were out positive on NVIDIA, basically expecting them to be added to the price-weighted Dow 30 index, which was, you know, who knows if that was a surprise or not, but just a cacophony of Wall Street voices chiming in on this big chip name, which has been, you know, the semiconductor space broadly has been a big focus over the past couple of weeks. Strong outperformance. You had ASML's results this week as well, which pointed to strong fundamentals within that industry. So just, you know, our readership chimed in. You know, this is a widely watched story. And, you know, I advocate everyone take a read. We had extensive coverage this week.
Yeah, check it out. Stephen, what about you?
Well, I don't think I have any choice but to talk about the B Word event, which featured Elon Musk and Jack Dorsey and Kathy Wood having a conversation. I don't think there was anything revelatory about it. Anyone who's been following closely, even on just on Twitter, didn't necessarily find too much new information. Elon Musk did say he personally owns Bitcoin, that SpaceX owns Bitcoin, Tesla, of course, owns Bitcoin. I'm always a little, I don't think that's huge news. Like, how much do you own? I mean, the guy's worth $200 billion. Does he own $1 million worth of Bitcoin? Who cares, right? But I think it's interesting. Like, it's and Brad and I had a conversation about this earlier this week, too. It's easy to dismiss Musk as either being willfully or purposely ignorant, because some of the stuff he says is completely cringeworthy to folks who kind of know the Bitcoin space. But on the other hand, you know, one can imagine Musk kind of in a group with the executive, you know, Ford and GM executives in 2008, right, talking about electric cars and kind of being laughed out of the room. Well, who's laughing now, right? So I don't think Musk should be like totally dismissed. It wouldn't surprise me at some point if he gets totally fully on board Bitcoin. It also wouldn't surprise me if, you know, he announces some kind of, I don't know, competing cryptocurrency at some point. Interesting stuff going on.
For me, I want to draw attention. This going back to the whole economic cycle. I saw a report here by Danske Bank, the Danish bank. And it basically, the premise is that the global manufacturing cycle has turned and has already peaked. And I thought that was very interesting. They had a series of charts and other things, and they kind of make a compelling case. And this is interesting because the U.S. economy, as we know, is not all that dependent on manufacturing, much more services. But China and other developing economies, China in particular, are still very much manufacturing hubs. So if the global manufacturing cycle has turned, that is another thing that does not really bode well for China's economy, regardless of what the officials over there will say about it having shifted to services and consumers and things like that. So I thought that was a really interesting piece this week. All right. Well, thank you all for being with us this week. Remember to check out the video as well as the audio podcast. Go to seekingalpha.com/videos. And the audio podcast is released on Saturday morning at around 6:30 a.m. through the Seeking Alpha Wall Street Breakfast podcast account. Get that anywhere you get podcasts. And with that, we thank you for watching or listening, as the case may be. Wish you a pleasant weekend and look forward to speaking to you again next week.
That concludes today's Wall Street Breakfast. Thank you for listening. For the best investment analysis and news on the web, go to seekingalpha.com. Subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher. You can sign up for our other podcasts, Behind the Idea, Essay for FAs, Let's Talk ETFs, the Cannabis Investing Podcast, and Marketplace Roundtable on those platforms as well. Have a great day.